The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Joanna LaForgia from the North Carolina Reading Service. And for the next half hour, I will be presenting content from the June-July copy of Southern Living Magazine. That, of course, is June-July 2025. This week, we are going to hear the Southern Journal, which is at the back. It's the back page of every issue, and it's by Rick Bragg. And then we'll go on to a cover story about Georgia, about mountain magic in North Georgia, which is on the cover of this magazine. The cover has a light blue to white background, and in the foreground is a casserole dish filled with golden grilled peach cobbler. And there are three white scoops of vanilla ice cream upon it. And the recipe for that, if you are interested, listeners, is in our June 6th podcast, 6625 Southern Living Podcast, on our website. And from the top to bottom, the print is Southern Living, and that is in a tomato red print. Taste of Summer, Peach Desserts, Chocolate Pie, and Other Sweet Delights. Oh, we promised we'd get to that one, too. I skipped that. We're going to do, going to get the recipe for that today as well, listeners. The Veggie Garden of Your Dreams, A Carolina Lake House Escape, Next Level Grilling Recipes, plus, there's a yellow, plus golden yellow plus sign, plus Mountain Magic in North Georgia. All right. And here is the back page of the magazine, Rick Bragg, that's B-R-A-G-G, Southern Journal. And there's always a cartoon picture of Rick Bragg, and in this one, it's a caricature of Rick Bragg, of course, oversized head. He's smiling, he has a receding hairline, brown hair, and a brownish, whitish beard and mustache. And he is in the foreground with his hand on the cover of a barbecue grill, and his other hand is holding an oversized rib of some sort that he's grilling. It's quite oversized. All around him, people are running away with their plates. There's one person on one side who just looks a little bemused, and he's walking away with his plate. That man has on a blue shirt and coffee-colored shorts and a baseball cap. Rick Bragg is also wearing coffee-colored cargo shorts and a red shirt with blue trim around the collar and the short sleeves, and some white stripes also, blue and white stripes around the short sleeves of this red shirt. And he has on blue tennis shoes, white socks with red trim, red around the rims of them, and red shoelaces. And he's wearing a white apron, cooking apron, bib apron over it all. And on the other side of him are three other people running there, a man, a woman, and a man, in that order. And they are, some of them seem to be tossing their plates in the air as they are running, and they look a bit worried at this oversized rib. One of the men is wearing a baseball cap and a tomato red and watermelon red horizontal striped shirt. The plates are white. There's a blue baseball cap on and cafe au lait colored cargo pants. The woman's wearing gray cargo shorts and a sleeveless blouse that has a white background and a print in the foreground of some coffee-colored, maybe leaves or something. And she has short, curly, brown hair and red shoes on. They appear to be heels. And then the other man is wearing blue jeans, brown shoes, and a charcoal gray short sleeve shirt, and he is hatless, and his hair is sticking up perhaps in the wind. It's brown and black mixture, and he looks quite surprised. All right, and here's our Southern Journal by Rick Bragg. Mystery meat, how the art of good barbecue continues to elude me. I have always dreaded getting old, but not for the reasons you might think. My jump shot, once a thing of beauty in my own mind, has failed me. I can no longer shoot, or jump for that matter. I stopped playing softball some years back because I was afraid a line drive would end my life. My reaction time can now be measured on a sundial. My fishing days are numbered. I still like to cast a line, but it hurts to stand, and I need bifocals to bait a hook. No longer do I dream about sliding inside a sleek sports car. I look stupid getting in and ache getting out. If you've ever wondered if you're too old for some activity, ask yourself this one question. Did I stagger as the thing was completed? I do when I stand up from an MRI and the booth at Hungry Hut Barbecue. But none of that really matters to me. I hate getting old because of all the skills I have failed to master, things that, as time trickles away, persist in evading me. I never expected to gain much wisdom or patience, and long ago gave up on dignity. But I would like to know, before Gabriel blows his trumpet, how to make some decent barbecue. I don't think that bothers people much in St. Paul, Minnesota. But down here, a man who is not master of his own grill is just kind of pitiful. It's like not being able to change your own flat tire or twist the lid off a jelly jar. I grew up with men who knew their way around a fire, who created barbecue sauces so perfect they would make you cry. I am not talking about the pit masters of yore, those old legends who looked as if they had walked out of the fire itself and would lovingly smoke a whole hog for a week and a half. I'm referring to the backyard grillers and smokers who could make a half chicken taste like it was kissed by the angels. They could lay a discarded rack from an old hot point range across a row of concrete blocks and, an hour later, plate up a mound of pork chops, hamburger patties, and hot sausage that would bring tears to your eyes. In leftover mayonnaise jars, they mixed their own sauces, ketchup-based concoctions stirred together with brown sugar and diced onion and hot mustard, with a touch of vinegar and a smidge of garlic and a speck of cayenne. But the worst thing is, I thought I was paying attention. I know that I am bad because of what happens whenever I offer to light up some charcoal. Someone will always immediately say, "Or we could just run to town and get something." I am told my hamburgers are mealy. My pork is rare. My weenies are burned to black sticks. And my chicken is sad. The white meat is dry, while the dark meat is still clucking. I don't even know how this can happen. Such faults could be forgiven in a younger person. There is time yet for his raising, his heritage, to properly take hold. I still hope it finds me. I should be easy to spot. I will be the old, creaky, confused man with crud on his face, staring deep into the blazing charcoal as though I were trying to divine some great wisdom. I should have known all was lost many, many years ago when a well-meaning friend looked into my grill and said, "Your fire's too hot." And all I could think was, "Well, it's fire, ain't it?" How could it be any other way? And that is Southern Journal by Rick Bragg. And now on to our icebox cake from the kitchen. Piece of cake. Chill out. Keep the oven off. And whip up this 5-ingredient icebox dessert. And listeners, this is printed on a page with a photograph of... The background is a cafe au lait, light brown, very pale brown tablecloth. And upon it, in the background, to the left and right of the plate in the center, are printed napkins, and they're peach-colored napkins of a floral print with some forest green, lime green leaves, fern leaves, and some cornflower blues. They might even be cornflowers. This is all floral, and some hibiscus that appear to be peach and watermelon red. And then also bleeding off the top and the right corner of the frame are a couple of peach-colored roses. We see them from the top in a small vase of some sort. And in the foreground and the center is a round plate, and it has a golden... It's actually seems like a pink plate, but it has another golden platter upon it. And there upon the platter sits our chocolate icebox cake pie. And it is a very dark brown around the rim. We'll start from the rim and then get to the center. Very dark brown, perhaps like the Oreo cookies, almost black around the rim. And then there's a circle of dark brown chocolate fudge looking. And then the rest of it, taking up more than from the center to almost about an inch to the edge all the way around, is the round whipped cream with chocolate chips and chocolate crumbs upon it. Or bits of, looks like maybe bits of Oreo cookies. Let's read the recipe and see. All right. Piece of cake. No-bake chocolate pie. Active time, 20 minutes. Total time, 25 minutes, plus 2 hours chilling. And listeners, this serves 10. Here are the ingredients. 20 cream-filled chocolate sandwich cookies, okay, such as Oreo, from one 13.29-ounce package. Plus more crushed cookies for a garnish. 1/2 cup of butter divided. 1 1/4 cups of heavy whipping cream. 1 12-ounce package of semi-sweet chocolate chips such as Ghirardelli. Sweetened whipped cream for serving. And here are the steps. 1. Grease a 9-inch pie plate with cooking spray and set aside. Process chocolate sandwich cookies into fine crumbs in a food processor about 45 seconds. Microwave 1/4 cup of butter in a small bowl on high until melted, about 30 seconds. With food processor running, add the melted butter. Pulse until well combined, about 15 seconds more. Step 2. Transfer crumb mixture to prepared pie plate. Firmly press the crumbs into the bottom and up the sides of the pie plate in an even layer. And freeze that for about 15 minutes. Step 3. Meanwhile, heat cream in a saucepan over medium until steaming. Do not boil. Pour that hot cream over chocolate chips in a large, heat-proof mixing bowl. Let stand 3 minutes. Gently whisk chocolate mixture until smooth. Cut remaining 1/4 cup of butter into small pieces and add it to the chocolate mixture. Stir until butter is completely melted and incorporated. And step 4, pour the chocolate mixture into chilled crust, spreading in an even layer. It will come right up to the top. Chill pie uncovered until set, about 2 hours. Top with whipped cream just before serving. Sprinkle with additional crushed cookies. And now, listeners, we'll move on to the South, the adventures in travel and culture. The South, and this is City of Gold. It's in our long weekend feature. City of Gold, reliving old memories and making new ones in the storied town of Talladega, Georgia. And this is by John Archibald. And Talladega, in case I'm not pronouncing it correctly, is D as in David. Talladega, excuse me. D as in David, A-H-L-O-N as in Nancy, E-G-A, Georgia. And this begins with a full-page photo of cascading waterfalls. They're wide, and they are five or six levels. So there's foaming streams, foaming waterfalls about 3 or 4 spaced apart, flowing down, spaced apart in different parts of these rocky cliffs. And they are stone gray rocky cliffs, but they are interspersed with some green trees. I was going to say shrubs, but they are probably trees once we get up closer to them. And the trees also frame the top and sides of the photo. They're very lush trees, very thick leaves. And the caption of this photo is "Go with the flow." Amicalola Falls is one of the several nearby cascades. There's shiny stuff swirling in the pan, flecks of mica and pyrite, and who knows what, but only fools and greenhorns mistake it for gold. You'll have to ignore a lot of sparkles to find what's truly valuable. Swish until the loose sediment washes away, until heavy black sand is all that's left. If you're lucky and patient, you'll spot a yellow glint. Gold. Unmistakable. You'll know it when you see it. Dopamine will kick in, and the hair will stand up on the back of your neck. Some people really do yell, "Eureka!" My dad was a Methodist preacher from a long line of them. He gave a sermon about gold fever once, decades ago, after our annual trip to Talladega, Georgia, about an hour northeast of Atlanta. It might have been about greed. It might have been about hope. It might have been about chasing shiny things. And listeners, we have photos here of, it appears to be the author with his son, or an older man with a younger man, a small photo in front of those falls. They're just in front of the pool, the bottom of the falls, it appears to be. And they're both smiling. The man, the older man has a blue shirt and khaki pants on with brown, seems like hiking boots, and gray hair, glasses. Can't see the faces too well. And the man beside him is wearing black shorts and a gray t-shirt. He's got a black beard and mustache, black hair. His sunglasses are on top of his head. And he's wearing a watch and white tennis shoes. And there's another photo of, we're looking into a cave of some sort, a gold mine it must be, perhaps. It says here, old mining, I can't read the sign too well, but there is an old, it's a bit blurred, but there's an, it says unsolicited old mining something, hand mine, 1891. And the entrance is framed with a wooden frame, and there is a lantern on either side in the front, and we can see inside into the depth a pathway and some steps leading deep into this cavern, to this dark cavern. There appears to be a light just lighting up the path to go in there. And then there's also a small photo of a hand, it appears to be a child's hand, holding a monarch butterfly, and those are the ones that are golden, orange, and black, with black outlines. It says, the caption says, natural wonders, from left, John with his father, at left, so the author was the younger man, and that was his father standing with him, at Cane Creek Falls, Consolidated Gold Mine, which offers underground tours, and a small winged resident at Dahlonega Butterfly Farm. And continuing with our story, friends, my kind of place. The Dahlonega Square is different now than how I knew it as a child, when my friends counted men with prospector beards as if they were Guernsey cattle in a game of cow pasture golf. Now there's a yoga studio and a jerky store, a market selling only British curiosities, a peddler of vintage musical instruments, and even a dessertery. There's a toy and game shop of a type that might, in more tiresome locales, refer to itself as a shop, S-H-O-P-P-E. Maybe even an old O-L-D-E one. Young buskers strum ukuleles outside Brad Walker Pottery on this day, harmonizing to a Jason Mraz song that was popular before they were born. It's a good spot across from Connie's Ice Cream and Sandwich Shop. And Catty Corner to the Fudge Factory, which has an aroma every bit as mesmerizing as the shimmer of gold. In the middle of this square is the old courthouse, and in that building is a museum telling Dahlonega's story. In 1828, a man named Benjamin Parks stubbed his toe on a stone. He looked down to curse that offending rock and saw it was yellow. You know what happened next. Dopamine. Hair on the neck. America's first gold rush. It is here where gold for Georgia's Capitol Dome was mined. A U.S. mint, for a time, processed North Georgia gold into legal tender. And before the Civil War, this place was lousy with prospectors and gamblers. It was a ne'er-do-well's refuge, a lawless, ungovernable community, quote-unquote. Dahlonega has always been my kind of place. And there are two photos here, listeners. One is of the street of the picnic cafe, and there are three ladies out in the front. And there's an American flag and a Georgia flag hanging outside, and some gardens and outdoor tables. And then there's a photo of a man cooking inside of it. He's wearing a baseball cap and a blue shirt and glasses, and he's got a gray or white beard and mustache, and he's got a spatula flipping what appears to be pancakes. But here's the caption. From left, Picnic Cafe and Dessertery is a popular place for breakfast, lunch, and baked goods like cookies and muffins. At the Fudge Factory, owner Tony Owens makes candy the old-fashioned way. Oh, so that's what he's flipping. Candy, looks like. Well, I guess it's vanilla fudge. It's golden fudge. So maybe maple fudge. Okay. A quirky place. A quirky balance. I admit I have long felt a false sense of belonging to this town and these hills, an undeserved sense of ownership. I came to Dahlonega every summer of my life, until recently, to a tiny cabin my grandfather Holland built on church camp land. It was barely more than a hut, without hot water, a TV, or a phone line, when that still mattered. That was how Dad wanted to keep it, and we kids came to agree, if grudgingly. It was a spiritual and natural retreat, a haven from the harshness of the world. So I fished in its ponds, stomped through creeks that glittered with mica, tubed down rivers like the Chestity and panned for Georgia gold. The memories are like still photos in the story of me. I see myself as a small child running with abandon on paths lined with mountain laurel. I see my children doing the same. These moments trigger emotions I can't adequately convey. Fried chicken with Dad at the Wagon Wheel restaurant. The meat and three he loved best. And the sad fact that they are both now gone. Pizza on the square with my daughter. Pepperoni, banana peppers, and feta became something personal. 4th of July fireworks at the University of North Georgia gave us cause to talk about the real meaning of freedom, of liberty for all, and the sacrifices made by those who truly value those concepts. A lot of shiny stuff swirls in my brain when I think of those times, and I don't want this place to change. I cussed when Walmart came, even when it sold live worms from a vending machine day and night. I howled when the county built the new high school near the camp where Holland Hut stood. How dare they value education? I mourned as the highways widened, as Atlanta turned North Georgia into a suburb, as companies raised hillsides to make malls for local convenience. I still grouse as I shop at the mall. Preciousness is a complicated thing. Dahlonega has changed, but it has held to the character that made it what it was. What else can you ask of a town or a person? This village has found a quirky balance. It somehow appeals to bikers and hikers and rebels and revelers, to students and aging flower children, to old men with prospector beards and young people with prospector beards and fingernail polish. Change, I remind myself, is not always pain. And, listeners, that's all the time for today's episode of Southern Living. I hope you enjoyed it and hope that you'll listen next time. I'm Joanna LaForgia, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any questions or comments, please call us at 919-832-5138. Once more, that's 919-832-5138. So long until next time.